Welcome back to Arsenal for Democracy. I'm your host, Bill Humphrey. Still in studio with me is Nate. We're talking now about the unaccompanied minors crisis, the children who've been coming across in huge numbers this year into the United States from Central America through Mexico and into the United States. It's been a bit of a crisis as to what to do with them. This problem essentially stems from the fact that there is a huge gang violence problem breaking out in Central America. It's been kind of building and festering for a number of years now, but the conditions have become extremely dangerous for people there, especially for children. And so many of their relatives there are kind of putting them on trains or in cars or whatever, and then just sending them north and hoping they get to the United States with the help of smugglers and such. And oftentimes they're being abandoned by themselves in the deserts just across the border of the United States, where they're supposed to surrender to Border Patrol at age 8 and then put themselves at the mercy of the United States government. And this is just a huge problem and a very unfortunate situation. A lot of people don't seem to really understand that many of these children, their parents are already undocumented immigrants in the United States in many cases, and their relatives back home are grandparents or aunts and uncles, and the situation has become untenable there, so they're being sent north to try to reunite with aunts and uncles or parents in the United States. The parents then can't really come reclaim them when they get intercepted by the government at the border because they are also undocumented. So then these children who have no way of reaching physically or by telephone or anything, reaching their parents in the United States, many of them don't even speak English. A lot of them are under age 14, even age 10, many of them, kids as young as 5 coming in with nothing but their, you know, birth certificate. And they have to survive just crazy levels of violence and scary situations just going through Mexico from Central America to get to the United States. And the United States seems to be kind of portraying this situation as sort of this mysterious thing of, oh, well, I don't know why there's suddenly all this violence in Central America. These Central American governments got to really get their act together. But there was an article last year in The Globalist, the headline, Curbing Gang Violence in Central America. And the issue there was talking about the need to escape MS-13. This is the Mara Salvatrucha 13 gang, referred to once by the FBI as the most dangerous gang in the country and by Nat Geo TV as the most dangerous gang in the world. Anyway, this is a gang that was formed in the United States, predominantly of Central American members, but again, in the United States, and then they were rounded up in these huge operations that are still ongoing and deported back to, rather than being held in prison in the United States, because most of them were undocumented, they were then being deported back to Honduras and Guatemala and El Salvador as well. And they basically then went home and set up new outposts of this gang. So this gang that was a U.S. problem, we then directly shipped back to these other countries and then kind of unleashed a new wave of violence. There was a previous wave of Central American immigration earlier, you know, a couple decades ago when there was all the civil wars going on down there. That kind of wound down, but then we sort of reignited the problem by shipping these organized gangs back. So they're going El Salvador, Honduras, Guatemala, and as the author of that article, Cesar Shalala, had written, to Americans, that may look like a problem solved. In reality, though, it only adds to the already serious social problems in those countries. They also bring back crack cocaine with all the problems that brings, and drug-related crimes start increasing, and then they enlarge the local groups. They find easy recruits, he says, among the disenfranchised youth. And then now their leaders are in their late 30s or 40s, but they have all these street members in their 20s. And these are the people that are threatening these kids that have been left behind. So, Nate, what's your take on this situation?
I mean, we're just getting to a situation with the drug violence in Mexico and all across Central America that it's almost destabilizing. It's been destabilizing the border here for a while. It's been destabilizing the flow of immigrants through Central Latin America. I mean, we're just getting to a situation where I don't really know what can be done to sort of solve these types of problems related to the various cartels and related to the violence that they bring. I mean, a large part of their revenue comes from the sale of narcotics in the United States, which in turn is invested in weapons, guns, explosives, all the sorts of things they need to continue their wars against each other, against the Mexican police force, against was actually watching this very interesting Vice series of Mormon colonies in Mexico and how they were defending themselves in basically wars with the drug cartels. Some of their members were kidnapped and murdered. Think about this and then think about basically the kids that are just trying to escape this violence.
These kids are being threatened with kidnapping, murder, and violence in Central America. Then they go to Southern Mexico to start their journey northward, and many of them are murdered or kidnapped and held for remittance ransoms against their parents and families living in the United States. And then if they're lucky, they get out of Southern Mexico, they get to Northern Mexico, they pay it, you know, have to pay some huge fee or have a family member pay it to smuggle them out of, you know, Northern Mexico into the United States, where they are promptly abandoned and then are just at the mercy of the local governments. And again, these are children. These are like 5, 6, 7, and 8-year-old children in many cases. Most of them do not speak English and they have no concept of the United States, how big it is. They have no concept of what a national border is in most cases. You can't say, oh, you crossed the border illegally if these kids don't understand that there are divisions between countries on a fundamental level. Yet they're kind of being turned into this hot potato in the United States that people don't seem to really know what to do with. Hillary Clinton had specifically said, after much pressing by Christiane Amanpour about a month ago in June, she had said that she thought that the children should be deported back to Central America once they figure out who's the adult family member down there that they can be returned to. That was her answer and is sort of the position that a lot of Republicans in office have also taken.
When you read Hillary's answer, I mean, I don't know. It was so I initially read one quote that was just talking about, okay, well, if we can find their responsible adults, then they should be returned. But, you know, Bill, you just played me the entire audio of it and sort of came away with a little bit of a different conclusion from that. And she just definitely does take a more forceful stance on, you know, basically saying that we should send them all back. And I mean, it kind of struck me as an example of, you know, Hillary's tried and tested sort of triangulation approach, kind of try to steer a course towards the middle, try to avoid pissing too many people off at once, or just try to find some sort of middle ground where you can plausibly say to Latino supporters, hey, I'm not trying to deport people, blah, blah, blah. But at the same time, you can say to, you know, your more white middle class voting base who's more skeptical of immigration, oh, well, I actually do want to control the border, send, you know, some of the illegals back, blah, blah, blah. So, I mean, she's just playing to both sides like she normally does. I mean, you just have to look at past examples like her, stance on flag burning, video games. It just, she has a tendency to tack towards the right whenever there's an opportunity for it, a way that she can feel like she can exploit some of that middle ground. That this is what the Clintons have been doing for the past, you know, 20, 30 years. I mean, they're very good at it, but that doesn't necessarily mean we always like it. So
right now, the official policy from the Obama administration has been trying to kind of find temporary locations for them facing great protests in places like Murrieta, or today from the governor of Nebraska, basically flying off the handle saying that there's a secret plan to move these undocumented children into my state. I mean, they're being taken to federal bases and other federal locations and trying to give them preliminary medical care, but we've already got kind of disease spreading and that sort of thing. Again, you've put a bunch of children in a small contained area. That's the inevitable consequence, no matter where they're from. It doesn't seem like a particularly humane way of treating them. I think as Governors O'Malley of Maryland and Patrick of Massachusetts have argued, Governor Patrick got very emotional in a speech calling for settling, at least temporarily, if not perhaps permanently, some of the undocumented children in locations in, I think, Western Massachusetts and Cape Cod, Barnstable County. These are two people that have also been potentially raised in the sort of imagine a Hillary vacuum of who might run for president at various points on the Democratic side, taking a much more kind of progressive stand on this and one that's a little bit more compassionate, I would argue. Again, I mean, these children are not coming here because it's some fun, awesome thing or that the American streets are paved with gold and all that kind of thing. I mean, they're coming here by necessity and having to overcome extreme levels of danger that the people sending them are well aware of. The children might not be aware of the problems that they're going to face on their way through Mexico, but the people sending them and the people in the United States already are well aware of that and know that full well when they put those kids on those trains and such to come north through Mexico to try to sneak into the United States. This is a textbook case of children, yes, in large numbers, seeking legitimate asylum in the United States. And yes, they got here without documentation, but you had kids, you know, fleeing from Cuba back, you know, what, 10, 15 years ago or so, and conservatives freaking out that we were deporting someone who came here unlawfully. We were deporting him back to Cuba. Now it seems like, oh, well, nope, that's only because they're coming from a communist regime. So apparently a communist regime that's not that oppressive compared to a violently murderous drug gang and cartel, apparently there's a different standard there. I mean, that's just so troubling. From my point of view, as a basic matter of human compassion, you've got to let these kids stay. You've got to let them stay. And if they get deported, they're not allowed to come back for 10 years, even through a legal process. Like, they can't even start applying for 10 years. And the craziest part of the Obama administration's policy that I can't figure out, I mean, it's not specific to them necessarily, but it's the official U.S. government policy, which is that unlike with family court or regular courts, criminal courts, things like that, immigration court federally does not have a right to counsel. There is no right to have a lawyer, which means that these children are being forced to defend themselves in court. They don't even speak English. Most of them are under 10, and they have been asked, according to the New York Times and various other sources, to defend themselves in court. This is so crazy to me. That is so cruel. What kind of a country makes six-year-olds who don't speak English go to an English language court and defend why they're in the United States?
Yeah, and I mean, this has just been a situation over basically the past 30 years, ever since there was an immigration bill that Reagan put forward, and it got done in, I think, 86 or something like that. I mean, ever since then, we've just done our immigration policy has just been colored by basically extreme hypocrisy. We're in a situation where it benefits, or it has benefited, you know, the U.S. economy for undocumented workers to work in various industries. Just they fill out certain jobs, and, you know, there are certain benefits to the U.S. economy by doing that. And the government has basically never actually enforced its sort of workplace checks on, you know,
legal status.
You know, obviously companies are not supposed to be hiring undocumented immigrants or people that they know are undocumented. However, over the past 30 years, they have, and the government has basically not done anything about it because, well, it could be argued that, you know, it's not in their interest to do anything about it. So, you know, and then of course there was the two immigration bills that failed during the Bush administration. You know, you have sort of a moderate stance on it by the former President Bush. I mean, it was definitely on the business conservative type economic side, but at the same point, it was basically torpedoed by members of his own party. So, you know, we're reaching a situation where you have, on the one hand, basically vast swaths of the entire right saying that this is a existential threat to our society, our way of life as an English-speaking populace, as a American nation that sort of is built on the glorification of, you know, picket fences and white people. And, you know, on the other hand, we're actually seeing that these immigrants that are coming to the United States, documented or undocumented, whether, you know, they're coming from Latin America or really anywhere else, they are actually providing tremendous benefits and working to make up a new fabric of American society that's extremely diverse, multicultural, bringing various, you know, aspects of the entire world and everything that comes with it, you know, culture, different ways of thinking, you know, food, everything. So it seems like we're not... Our politics are a little behind the times, and they have been for a while now. I mean, if we're going to pass immigration laws and then not enforce them, or talk about immigration laws and then not actually pass them, or basically, you know, we're at the point of the Obama administration where there hasn't even been a bill put forward because I think they just know that it's not going to get anywhere. I mean,
well, there was a bill that passed one chamber.
Okay. Well, yeah, I mean, there hasn't been like a concentrated push for immigration reform. I mean, Obama will mention it and has done a couple things with executive orders, but there hasn't been a comprehensive immigration. And that's the thing we always talked about during the Bush administration, comprehensive.
Yeah.
We're not seeing that now because, I mean, it may just be possible that there just isn't the political capital to deal with the situation right now. And I just think that's crazy. I mean, we're reaching a situation where we could potentially, is it what, 12, 15 million undocumented?
Yeah, it's about 11 to 13 million, depending on how the economy is doing. Some people go back.
Yeah, yeah. I heard it dropped off a little bit after the recession had started. But I mean, at the same time, I don't understand why it's beneficial for the United States to, and this is sort of the de facto scenario we're at. People are basically tolerated. If you're an undocumented illegal immigrant, you can get a job in certain industries. But now that all these people are here, it feels weird to put it this way, but like we're not getting the benefits from them as a society, the full benefits. So we're not getting money that they make in taxes. People may be using the U.S. healthcare system while not being registered for insurance or anything like that. Social Security, yes, but maybe income taxes, no, or other types of taxes, no. It's obviously way more complicated than this, but it just seems like everything would be so much easier if we just went forward with some sort of immigration reform that allowed people to that are already here to stay here and keep working, and but of course pay taxes and contribute to the various social safety nets that maybe that they're drawing on, so that they're not creating some sort of imbalance scenario. Because obviously you don't want a situation where you have a large population that is A, not contributing to any sort of social programs, but also B, taking from them. That's how you start making those start out of whack a little bit. But we're really reaching a point now where we need to actually start thinking about this and not just sort of have various platitudes, both from the right and now increasingly looks like from some parts of the left, that, oh, we just need to send these people back and all our problems will be solved. Because they'll come back.
They will come back. I mean, if they went through all the trouble to get here the first time, just saying don't come or we're sending you back isn't going to keep people from trying again.
Yeah, they'll just come back and try better not to get caught this time.
Yeah, and again, children, minors. Less than 14, definitely less than 18, 11,000 this year put into deportation proceedings, and we're only in July at this point, and that's double the entire calendar year 2013. So that is a serious problem, but it's also a problem we can fully absorb as a country of, what, 312 million people or however many we're up to now. We can fully absorb children, and then they're going to be awesome members of the United States, and they're going to be part of our society, they're going to be part of our economy, they're going to live awesome lives, they're going to pursue the American dream, and it's going to be great. Let them stay. They went through all the trouble of getting here. They clearly want to be here, and they're going to be absorbed right into American culture, just like every other wave of immigration has eventually been absorbed into the United States social fabric every other time before. This is something that we can definitely handle. This is not something that's an existential threat to the United States. I mean, Nate used that phrase earlier, and I had joked that, you know, the American militia movement considers this to be, you know, these Central American toddlers, essentially, to be an existential threat to the United States. And obviously they're not. They're little tiny children who are being forced to defend themselves in deportation proceedings without a lawyer, which is absurd and inhumane and should be against everything that the American value system holds to be true. This is so stupid. And these people freaking out about, we can't have them here and we got to go defend our border with guns. They are little tiny children. They are 8-year-old Guatemalans. I think you're going to be okay. Okay, I don't think you need to threaten to shoot them in the head. We as a people can overcome the 8-year-old Guatemalans and the massive threat that they present to the United States existentially. This is not Lil MS-13, the world's most dangerous toddlers. You know, we can handle this. We can overcome this problem.
Yeah, and I mean, I love when people talk about how, oh, the growing influence of Spanish will somehow, you know, sort of degrade American society, American culture, and we have to put laws in place to make sure that English is the national language. And some parts of the immigration bills have included portions of, like, if you apply for legal immigration status, you have to learn English. Like, all of these people that are coming to the U.S. will learn English because they want a job and they want to communicate with other people that maybe are not, you know, native Spanish speakers. They will learn English. I don't think there is a single immigrant to the United States. I don't even think it's 1%. That have come and not learned English within the, you know, the first 5 years. So obviously you don't learn English right away. And especially when you're talking about kids, you just learn languages easier as a kid. If you're grow up in Guatemala and move to the U.S. or immigrate to the U.S. or illegally immigrate to the U.S. at age 9, by age 15, you'll be a fluent English speaker. Like, I don't think there's any question about that. This is not some sort of crisis where, oh, the children are not learning English anymore, they're only learning Spanish. No, people that were born in Guatemala, grew up speaking Spanish, come to the U.S., they will learn English. Maybe they'll have an accent. You'll have to deal with it. I'm sorry, yeah, but
they're gonna learn English because they're kids, and their parents will probably learn English. But if not, the second generation generally always learns English. I mean, there have been certainly exceptions in this country. Like, you could look at some absurd minority case, like the Texas Silesians or whatever, who are still speaking a weird, like, mid-19th century offshoot dialect with their own word for rattlesnakes or whatever that comes from areas of Poland or something like that.
Yeah,
there's like 200 of them or something. Vast majority of the people in this country who have these other languages will eventually learn English. It's never been anything close to some sort of threat. The immigrant population in the United States peaked out at about 1 in 4, meaning that 1 in 4 of everyone in the country was an immigrant to the United States. And
when was this bill?
I think that was like turn of the, you know, 19th to 20th century.
Like 1905 or something.
Yeah.
Like that.
And if we persisted and overcame that quote unquote threat to the Anglo-American culture, we'll definitely be able to survive this one without any trouble at all. And, you know, other point to remember is that a lot of the United States used to be Spanish speaking to begin with and never stopped being Spanish speaking. Those people never left, especially in Texas. There was a large Spanish speaking population that was always here within the context of the United States. They never went anywhere. So this is part of the culture as well, this sort of dualism. And again, as with all these things, we can absorb it and we can overcome this. If you think that the United States and your culture is so fragile that it can't handle a 7-year-old from Honduras coming here because of the threat to language, population, and social services, then you clearly don't have as much confidence in the United States of America as we do. All right, Nate, thank you so much for joining me here on Arsenal for Democracy this week.
Thanks a lot, Bill.
And that's all the time we have this week. Thanks for listening to Arsenal for Democracy. Tweet us your comments at AFDRadio or email AFDRadio@gmail.com. The show is available for download from ArsenalForDemocracy.com on Wednesdays. You can also hear it on the air in Delaware from 91.3 FM WVUD and WVUD HD1 Newark every Wednesday night at 6 p.m. Eastern. Special thanks to my voiceover man, Justin. You can follow his work at the Digitized Ramblings of an 8-Bit Animal from 8BitAnimal.com. You can get additional commentary at ArsenalForDemocracy.com daily, as well as links to articles discussed today. From my studio in Newton, Massachusetts, I'm Bill Humphrey, and I approve this message. Good night.